Hello again, and welcome to the second episode of Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take F1 roundup show with the almost believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here has been carefully researched for hours to make sure it is totally founded in logic, reason, and truth. Or maybe not. Who knows? I am one half of this podcast. I am the American half of the podcast. My name is Andrew, and I am only here because I thought it was a joke.
Hi, I'm Dominic. I'm the British half of this podcast. And I'm never quite sure whether this is meant to be a joke or not, but here we are in the second episode, because once you started something, we're going to finish it.
Well, my alma mater was Texas A&M, and anytime you do anything twice, it's a tradition. So we've officially done this twice now.
Okay, I'm going to need more background on that, because I don't understand it. But let's move on. First of all, the question is, of all the crazy predictions that we had last week, did we get any right?
We did get one right. Charles Leclerc took a grid penalty for his control electronics. Only two races into the season, you get two control electronics, and he burned through both of them before quali even started of the second race. So 10 places for him, and absolute master strategy there from Ferrari.
Would we expect anything less from the Ferrari strategy team? World-class ability to make the strangest strategies you can imagine. They must have some 4D hyper chess here. Is this all about reliability again? They're setting it up so that they can improve their engine yet again, like they did last year, where reliability was so bad they had to improve it and they found all that extra horsepower, but apparently also forgot to fix the reliability.
I can't get over like the, oh, you're only allowed to do reliability fixes. Well, what even is a reliability fix? Like, I think it would be much more interesting if they capped it at the horsepower that you could get out of the combustion engine and maybe also the hybrid system as well, and then see who can optimize the best. Like, sure, we'll give you 5% over what the peak was last year, but who can make the most fuel-efficient engine? Like, that seems to me where if you're going to put a cap on the engine, that's how you do it. You do it by power, because at the end of the day, everybody is just putting out the same power on the grid, and then it's who can, you know, maybe use the less fuel or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, making the engine lighter, making it more reliable so that like from the perspective of the cost cap, now you don't have to keep buying more engines. It just seems like a much better way to do it.
Not to mention you can like also see who can turn their engine up to 11 for the longest. So instead of this like where we ended up at the end of 2021 where, you know, Max was trying to save his engine and Lewis just put a brand spanking new one in there and lapped the field pretty much in the last couple races. Like, you know, could you just do that all the time?
Yeah, it's so interesting. And then you look at this week, not only did Ferrari do that, McLaren took a new engine for Lando Norris because apparently they broke it last time. Both the AlphaTauris took new engines, and both the Red Bulls took new gearboxes, and Max even went back to the original gearbox after it broke again. Like, at this point, it's a repeat of last year with nobody can make their engine last more than 5 minutes in the first, you know, four races.
Hey, at least everybody's sticking true to the adage of if the car survives the race, then you didn't make it light enough. What was it, Colin Chapman?
That's a good one. I like that. I mean, but the flip side of that is, you know, to finish first, you've got to first finish.
Going straight into Jeddah, like, that Red Bull looks like we don't care how many penalties we take, we're just going to go fast.
Did they take any penalties, though?
They didn't, but you have to imagine they're coming. Like, when you're already on your second gearboxes at the second race, you know, there might be other parts you unlock. They're going to have to take penalties probably at some point in the system or at some point during the season. So, you know, if I'm Red Bull, I'm looking here going, what, after the safety car restart, they were a second a lap faster than the Aston Martin.
It was ridiculous.
And 2 seconds faster than the midfield. At that point, it's like, okay, let's just make sure we pick an overtake-friendly track and put in a brand spanking new engine. Who cares? We're fine.
I mean, the implications are that for next season, it's going to be even worse. Because at this point, they don't need to develop the car this year. Like, what was it? Was it 2020? That Mercedes said that their car was so far in front that they stopped development of their car like in the first third of the season so that they could spend it on 2021. Not that that really helped them in the end. But if you look at Red Bull this year, like if this car is genuinely a second faster, everybody else has to catch up to be equal, right? Not to beat them, to be equal. And so if you're Red Bull, like you just spend your 60% of your tunnel time that you've got because you cheated last year, I mean the year before, you go spend it on the next year's car and you're back into the lead again by another second and a half.
I mean, that's a really good question of how much is the penalty from the cost cap going to bite them with the aero time and CFD time?
Yeah, I mean, but with that lead, with that 1 second lead per lap, and it was basically the same in Bahrain, right? Even if it cuts them deep, they're still going to be competitive at the front. right? They, instead of having to, you know, win because the car just happens to be comically fast, you know, Max will have to actually drive the car, which he seems to be able to do.
And I think last year we saw that, like, the Red Bull and Ferrari were, like, they were strong on opposite tracks, and I believe Bahrain and Jeddah are kind of different strength tracks. And here the Red Bull was fast on Bahrain, and it's fast at Jeddah.
I'm going to say that this was a weird race in a very strange way, in that it felt very similar to last year. Like, the emotional, like, the mini arguments, the questions that were going on all felt very similar, but then you look at it and it's just different players in a very similar kind of relative position to everybody else. It was weird. The results were totally different, but for some reason it feels very similar to me, and I can't rationalize that in my head.
I think Lance Stroll actually ruined what was going to be a pretty interesting race, because you had Max and Charles charging through the field. Max was a pit stop behind the lead of the race, but moving quickly, and as we saw in the later half of the race, had the pace. And then you had Fernando carrying a penalty, a 5-second penalty. And, you know, George was close on that penalty and how that would have maybe shifted the balance if you had to do it in race time. And then pretty much because of the genius Aston Martin strategy of going for the undercut and getting overtaken by both Ferraris, Ferrari, for whatever reason, you know, they were kind of out of sync after that. But then everybody took the free pit stop under the safety car, and we were left with a majority of the field on hard tires, which they didn't seem to be working the best. Granted, Max put in a great fast lap at the very end to take the fastest lap points. But it was going to be this really interesting case of, you know, how far was Lewis going to run before he flipped over to the mediums? The mediums clearly died for the medium runners after the safety car. Lewis fell back. Sargent fell back. So anybody who went to the mediums after on the first pit stop, you know, or after the safety car stop, didn't do the best. The Ferraris just couldn't catch the Mercedes and pass them. The Mercedes couldn't catch Fernando and pass him. And the Red Bulls, meanwhile, were just la-di-da-ing out in front.
While they were supposed, I couldn't quite work out what Checo was complaining about, but he was complaining about something. But they were just lollygagging around a second in front of everybody else. It was ridiculous.
Oh, I think we call that a Mark Webber second driver syndrome.
Okay. So they're making Checo drive his car until it breaks so to make sure that Max can get the win.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pure multi-21 situation right there.
I still don't understand multi-21, and I've read everything about it other than everybody was a jackass to everybody else.
Yeah, the best thing, yeah, if we want to go back in time on this episode of the podcast to Malaysia 2012, I think is what it was.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much they had Seb and Webber had a run-in Brazil, and then, like, essentially what ended up being three races later, not in time, but in calendar, because it was also, like, 4 months later, there was a situation where Webber was leading at Malaysia, and they were both safe to the McLarens behind, and at that point, team radio or team orders were disallowed, so it was multi-map 2-1, which pretty much said, we're going to leave the second driver in front and the primary driver behind. And Seb did not like this, wanted all the points, so Webber was kind of cruising, and then next thing he knows, he has an attacking Sebastian Vettel coming up behind him, and they almost hit each other in the pit wall, and all sorts of craziness happened.
So what you're really saying is that Red Bull caused the vibration that Max was feeling to prevent a multi-21 situation, because he clearly loosely backed off to prevent his car from going bang.
Yeah, until he took, like, 1.8 seconds out of Checo in the last lap, going for the fastest lap.
He knew that at that point they told him it was okay. They made it clear that he could go do it. Like, he couldn't win at that point. He couldn't take it from Checo. So that's what they pressed the little button that turned the vibration machine off, and so that he felt safe again.
Yeah, that's a really interesting balance that Red Bull's going to have to strike as Checo gets more familiar with the Red Bull equipment and faster, because I think Max is still clearly the number one driver by long and away, but, you know, how much do you want to keep Checo happy and think about the long-term championship versus what Max wants?
I think it's interesting to think about Adrian Newey and his relationship with the drivers and the design of the car, because it was for the longest time stated that the car was way pointy because that's what Max liked, to the detriment of every other driver. I wonder if Checo and the amount of money they must be spending on him made them feel like they had to get it right or at least be drivable by Checo. And while that helped Checo, I wonder if this has made the car even more awesome to the point that Max can extract more from it, right? There's like, you've raised the bar for all boats and everybody feels happy about it, but because Max is clearly, you know, going to be a goat at some point, if not already the GOAT, he can extract even more from it without even really trying. Like, it's such a drivable car, it seems to be anyway. What we need to do is see Danny Ric in it and see whether he can drive it well.
Let's not get into Australia predictions.
So while we're here talking about Jeddah, do we want to talk about, you know, the potential for Crashgate 2.0? Like,
I refer to it as, I refer to it as Stop the Cargate.
Stop the Cargate.
Well, because there wasn't a crash.
That's true. That's true. I mean, Lance did not want to crash his car, maybe, but he was willing to do something.
He pulled over. He left the GPS receiver at the very end of the car on the track, so it was enough to say that the stewards decided it was time for a full safety car.
Did they really need to leave the end of the car? They could. I mean, do we think that was the case? Like, do you think just Aston Martin just lied and just gypped the GPS so that it looked like it was reporting a different result? I don't know if the teams have that much control over the GPS devices.
Oh, I don't know. Either way, they said what Brundle was saying on the commentary, that the GPS track showed that the car was still on the track.
Yeah.
And if you looked at the overhead shot, the back maybe eighth was still technically in the line of fire.
Yeah, but, you know, GPS is not that accurate. Like, it's down to, like, 10 centimeters, so there's something...
Not to mention around all the tall buildings.
Indeed so. So, you know, there's something a bit sus going on there. And, of course, it would involve Nando, who then gets a free pit stop.
And he get he served his penalty, which kind of resulted in no penalty, because he was able to do it so quickly.
Yes, I was surprised when I saw him come out on track in... seconds still. I was surprised after the 5 second delay that he was taking in the pit stop. I was surprised that he managed to come back out in a reasonable place.
Well, and then turned out that they could have awarded him another penalty because of that, but then the stewards decided to do nothing for 39 laps, and apparently they only have a 30 lap window to assign this penalty, which I have to say I really like. And then there we go. He loses his third place, and then he immediately gets it back.
It's interesting to think about that as a strategy for subsequent races. Then now in this case, right, there was not enough gap, but if you look at races such as Spa, which is what, 44-42 laps, it's pretty easy to be able to look at that. There is an opportunity to try and get an on the bubble judgment, you know, your 1/10 of a second or some other technicality that the stewards have to think about it, and maybe they won't be able to get there in time.
Well, this seems like one of those, like, really cut and dry penalties. Like, how come you were able to give him a grid start failure or procedural failure penalty with almost in the first lap, but it takes us an hour to figure out if somebody touched a car?
It was pretty clear he was in the wrong place on that on the thing.
It was pretty clear somebody touched the car.
I'm not so sure that was clear from the way they were looking at it. I'm pretty sure somebody tipped them off, and I'm pretty sure that name was that company began with an M and ended in a CDs.
Zach Brown also seems like the tattletale kind of type.
Yeah, but he wouldn't win anything from that.
Oh, he doesn't have to.
Because he's just a stickler for rules?
Yes.
I see.
Because if everybody else is having fun and he's not having fun, he wants to ruin somebody else's day.
I see. Okay. That's an interesting take, but I will subscribe to that. I'm not sure I'm willing
to.
Sir,
this is an interesting take podcast. Like, that's the whole point.
That's very true. It is tinfoil helmets.
And speaking of McLaren, is Lando getting the Danny Ric treatment now?
I'm getting asked to move over and let the new kid through. I was very surprised by that. Like, not only because, oh, Lando's the best driver, of course he's the second coming, blah blah blah, etc. etc. But more so is, like, there's nothing really at stake. There were no points at stake. It was effectively gentleman's racing at that point. Why ask him to move over and let him through? Like, was this ultimately a concern about banging into each other and breaking the cars, which maybe I don't think they were stupid enough to do that. So I'm very curious what the motivation there was.
It could also just be the case of let Patrese get some elbows out racing experience. Maybe they're thinking of the Rookie of the Year title already. You know, oh hey, we overtook the other contender for Rookie of the Year. So you gotta think of maybe that battle. Also, maybe just some on-track racing experience was what they were looking for. I don't know. It was a bit odd, that's for certain.
But what would the on-track racing experience of taking on whoever was in front of them, I can't remember, versus racing against Lando, right? Still racing experience.
Learning how to overtake a car that's not identical to yours?
True. There isn't a tractor.
How closely did you watch that Williams-McLaren battle?
I did not watch it that closely.
So there was one time where it was when Sargent was still right behind, what, Hulkenberg or something like that, and he might overtake Hulkenberg. And Lando is almost right alongside the Williams. They both opened up their DRS, and the McLaren just went backwards. That thing is a brick.
I did see that. I remember watching that where he was like, yeah, I'm going to take him, and he's going, putting his foot down, and he opens the flap, and you're like, I'm going backwards. This isn't how this is supposed to work. I'm supposed to go forwards. It was very strange.
That was embarrassing almost. At the very least, you should remain somewhat even. And it was like he didn't even have his DRS open.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, as I was thinking about it at the time, because I do remember that one, was I did think about the fact that the Williams is supposedly a slippery fish, right? It goes very fast in a straight line, but woe betide you should you try to go around a corner. Kind of fitting for an American driver now.
Or brake.
Also true. Yes, that was seemed to be somewhat of a challenge. I was a little concerned when they said brake failed, and I'm like, that's not a good thing to happen. Actually, didn't they have this problem last year as well?
I think they did, but yeah, the Williams is one of those, if it were me, I'd rather have a fast, slippery car. We can figure out the braking and turning later.
True, because then you just learn not to press the brakes as much, and you can go even faster, because really that's the goal at the end of the day. It was very surprising to see that, and it was... I don't know what happened at McLaren. It's GP2 time. And you can't blame the engine this time because it's the same engine that's in the Aston Martin, the second best car on the grid. And the Mercedes, ostensibly based on results, the third best car on the grid. And then you've got the crappiest car at the back. You can't blame your engine in that situation. It was very strange. It's very strange. I feel like there needs to be a breakdown of what's gone on. Part of me wonders when Andreas Seidel jumped ship to Sauber is maybe he knew that this was going to be a disaster already, and he just saw that opportunity to get out before he could get the blame. Because can you imagine the blame he would be receiving right now? I bet you the new guy gets at least, a free pass for a few races until, he sorted the mess out, if it's possible to sort that mess out.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of sorting messes out, do you want to talk about Mercedes at all?
Oh, go on. Why not? I'll save my proper spicy takes for later.
I don't quite know what to think of Mercedes at this point in time because, it looks like they found something this weekend that could keep the Ferraris behind after that pit stop or after the safety car.
But if you reflect on last year, the same pattern kind of happened, right? The Ferrari bit, I think, is a Ferrari problem, not a Merck success. Last year, Merck kept going, oh, God, it's the terriblest car in the world. Oh, it's bloody awful. What are we going to do about it? I don't know. In the race, hopefully we'll do better. And you get to the race, and then George gets in front, somewhere into fourth or fifth, and then Lewis languishes around at the back, and eventually gets somewhere, and the car is not as bad as it appeared to be. The difference is this time Ferrari have screwed up, because apparently they've forgotten how to wait. They never knew how to do strategies. But the car is clearly not as good as it was last year. But, it's this weird Merck thing. They can't qualify. They seem to be able to race, and I'm not quite sure what that's really about.
Yeah, that's a good point. It looks like I've seen a lot of their internal press statements that are coming out that they seem to have found something, so that'll make the car faster. So when the improvements start coming in, what, Imola and Baku, we'll see maybe where the true pace of that Mercedes really lies.
Yeah, there was I think it was it a pre-race or was it a post-race interview I saw? I didn't see the interview, I saw the commentary on the interview, which was basically in the long lines of somebody saying, how do you as Toto and Mercedes feel about the fact that your concept isn't working and blah, 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 blah. And Toto's like, I don't care what the car looks like, all I want to do is go fast. If that means copying Red Bull, we're going to copy Red Bull. Which I think is a very reasonable approach to look at it at this point. But if I take a step back and think about that, the commentary about our car's terrible, and I think you and I have talked about the fact that there's a little bit like the lady doth protest too much here, where Toto's like, oh, woe is me, oh, woe is this, and it's like, really? And then you hear them saying, oh, we found some performance with a new design. I'm like, what were you doing for the previous 6 months of the season, right? Between March and September last year, if you had this thing in your pocket that might have looked better, surely your preliminary results will have told you this is better, and they should have just doubled down on that. Why are they now waiting till now? That just feels like a failure of being able to look at your car in an objective manner and go like, nah, box.
I mean, confirmation bias is a real thing. True. You see numbers get better. You don't know what the other team's numbers are, and then you rock up to qualifying in Bahrain and go, oh, their numbers are better than our numbers. And it could also lead back to everything you've been saying about the CFD not lining up with their on-track performance. And now that they actually have some on-track performances to look at, they can go, oh yeah, this is a problem. This isn't great.
Toto did make that comment yesterday. He was saying that once they got to Bahrain and they were able to run the car and see how the behavior actually was, it enabled them to really understand how bad... I can't remember the exact phrase, but it wasn't like how bad the car was, but they finally understood something about seeing the car behave as badly as it did. And I got the impression it was that little bit of CFD correlation, to the point that they'd ran some numbers that said it was going to be pretty good, but they'd run another set of numbers with some tweak that said, no, it's not going to be any good. They held on to the belief that it was going to be good. They ran the car. It turns out it was a terrible tractor. And now they understand where it's wrong, and now they can go fix it.
Yeah, this goes back to the thing of, how come you never check the test result when you get the result you want?
Well, because it's gone green, I'm good now, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Perfect. One other thing I wanted to say about Jeddah, I thought actually James Vowles on the radio was actually pretty good for a team principal. I find so often the team principals political their way out of most responses, or they're a buffoon like Otmar, who don't seem to know anything that's going on with the team. I thought it was actually pretty good that he was able to say, like, no, the brake discs look good. No, I can't tell you what it is because we ain't looked at it yet, but it's definitely concerning, et cetera, et cetera. I thought that was pretty good in a way that, having seen him do the bits of PR for Mercedes, I was like, I don't know about that. He wasn't very good, but he seemed pretty good here. So I was pleased with that.
Well, it wouldn't be a hot take conspiracy podcast without mentioning he had a Red Bull in hand.
I saw that and I was like, oh, suspicious. I can't believe he would continue Jos Capito's lean towards the Red Bull side. I feel he has to stick with it. Maybe it's just mind games with Toto at this point. It's like, I'm going to drink the Red Bull, screw your Monster sponsorship, I prefer the taste of Red Bull, and make you think that you need to give me something so I'll stick with your engines.
I'm always a fan of Christian Horner chats on the pit wall, though, because they are the most political, backstabby, passive-aggressive answers. They are the best.
He's got the biggest spoon in the biggest teacup, and he's stirring it as fast as he possibly can in a desperate attempt to make it all spill over the side and put someone off their game. I'm not sure it works with Toto, but I think it works with some other people, though.
I think it works with Toto when Red Bull has the fastest car. When the stopwatch does not lie, we don't necessarily have any problems. But when, oh, if we all raise the height of our car 5 centimeters, that way we can stop the porpoising and hurting the drivers. No, you fix your crap car. Like, it does work when you are behind.
Yeah, but I think that antagonism in the moment of the actual discussion is better than when he does it on the wall. Like, I think the stuff that Christian lobs over the pit wall at Toto, I don't think that impacts it, but I totally agree in the room, definitely drives Toto nuts.
Yeah.
Speaking of porpoising, I noticed that the Ferrari was bouncing like a pogo stick again.
So moving on from Jeddah, I really didn't see anything in the time between the races that really led me to any spicy takes. But I just have to say, after watching Checo celebrate with all the Red Bull mechanics and things, is Jos Verstappen just not the poster child for generational trauma?
Yes, I completely agree. That man has some... He's got something deep buried in his mind that he needs some therapy to get over, to be brutally honest. I mean, Max probably does too, but I think it all starts with Jos.
Yeah, but I think Max at least now has a better outlook than he used to, because, you know, in kind of the post-race interviews, it's like, you know, are you happy with second? He's like, look, given everything that went on today, second, fastest lap, leading the championship, can't be too upset about that.
Is that maybe why Jos is looking so cranky? Is he really realizing that he's losing the grip? On you know, the vice-like grip on Max's attitude, and now in fact Max knows that he's got 2 world championships and he's beaten the GOAT and it's all good.
Well, I guess Jos and Anthony can always form a F1 driver's dad support group.
Oh man, now that is an interview I want to say, like, your guide to raising your child race driver, presented by Jos Verstappen and Anthony Hamilton. That'd be great.
I'm just thinking of who do we need to talk to at the F1 podcast of, like, Behind the Grid to get Jos and Anthony on at the same time.
We should tweet that if we had a Twitter account. So this segment from my side maybe should better be renamed The Real House Owners of Monaco, because I'm going to go a little bit off track, and talk about some weird things. So first up is, what is up with Red Bull's catering? Right? Max missing the press conference because he had gastrointestinal issues. We also have to remember that his dad has missed both his races in the Netherlands due to gastrointestinal issues. And Mexico 2022, apparently neither Checo nor Max, they were very close to missing the race because of gastrointestinal issues, which makes me raise a bunch of questions about what is going on over there. Because it's like, surely it planes are supposed to have the pilots get a different meal to the rest of the people on the plane to make sure that you don't get food poisoning. And that includes the co-pilot and first pilot. No, that's not right. The pilot and captain get different meals to make sure that these things don't happen. But yet Red Bull don't seem to be able to follow that. It seems very suspicious, if you ask me. It could also just be that Max didn't want to do the press conference.
As the American on the podcast, I have to mention that Max didn't leave for the track, so clearly he caught this in the Netherlands. Jos missed both races in the Netherlands. Is this just a penance for putting mayonnaise on your French fries?
Hang on. Mayonnaise and French fries is a great combination. Second, most importantly, it's not the Dutch that do that. It's the Belgians, which in this context is accurate because, in fact, Max was born in Belgium.
And Jos is Belgian too, isn't he?
I have no... Oh, yeah, you know, I think you're right. And it's his wife who is from the Netherlands. But nonetheless, mayonnaise on chips. Absolutely brilliant idea. Perfect. I don't think anybody could think that was terrible.
Oh, I didn't say it was terrible. I'm just saying, is this not the source of the problems?
Maybe. Okay, so my second real homeowners of Monaco issue is I think Mercedes and Hamilton are heavily laying the groundwork for Hamilton's retirement at the end of 2023. And I know I say this at the beginning, the middle, and the end of every season, but this year I think the stars are aligning. So we can take some kind of second order things first. Where's Hamilton in all the press pictures? He's basically never there. It's always George. George has to go do all the media stuff, right? And this year, not only is like when Bottas was doing it, you'd see Bottas, but they'd still post some old picture of Hamilton. This year, they don't post pictures of Hamilton. They just have George, and George and his boyish good looks are there, trying to look so British and English and all of those wonderful things with his, you know, top off and whatever else. But we don't see Lewis. Right.
I mean, that's quite the inspiring take to not get out of the way when your team asks you to let the other guy through.
Indeed. We know who runs that team. And then you have things that Toto says that it would make sense for Hamilton to seek another team if they can't give him a championship winning car. That is clearly setting it up for he can't get the car this year. He's going to take a year out because it's only ever a year and then come back with another team. And who would sign him? Who's going to sign Lewis Hamilton, right? Nobody's going to pay that much money and nobody wants to deal with his crap, right? He's just going to have so many, a litany of requirements with respect to his media positioning that I don't think he's going to want to do that.
I mean, I can think of two teams that would sign Lewis Hamilton. McLaren. Number one, Ferrari.
Really?
I mean, it's been like the rumor like on and off for years, and Hamilton even addressed it some a year or two ago of like the, oh yeah, maybe like Ferrari and I have always kind of been will they, won't they sort of thing. So you're telling me that Ferrari like wouldn't put Lewis Hamilton in the car over like Carlos Sainz?
But they couldn't do that, though. They'd have to get rid of Leclerc, because Leclerc is the golden boy. And they can't have two golden boys. They have to, like, they'd have to get rid of Leclerc.
No, you have your seven-time world championship champion to mentor your golden boy.
I see.
And then, of course, the Zak Brown gets fired. Lewis goes back to McLaren.
Ron
the ghost
Dennis
of Ron
returns.
Dennis comes. Yeah, Ron Dennis returns. Or the ghost of Ron Dennis.
What do you mean the ghost of Ron Dennis? He's still there. He's still alive. Oh, he's writing a book, apparently.
Sure, and I'm sure he still haunts the walls of the McLaren Technology Center, even if he's still alive.
True. Then you could get You can even get Martin Whitmarsh back from Aston Martin, and you can reunite for 2007. Then he can bring Alonso back to McLaren. It's the race we've always wanted.
All right, when's Mika coming out of sabbatical?
Any time now to be the sporting director, because apparently whoever they've got now is awful and can't make the cars work.
You know, honestly, there's your replacement for Zak Brown.
Mika.
Yeah.
Is Mika really the management type?
You want to win, employ the Finn.
That's a great... Didn't work for Bottas, who came, what, Did he retire today, or was he basically last? I can't remember.
He was basically last.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, and the last, the final leg of...
Well, and to be clear, Bottas has never raced for McLaren. Mika Häkkinen and Kimi Räikkönen have both raced for McLaren.
If you want to win in a McLaren, hire the Finn.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Got it. Got it. The third leg of the terrible hot take barstool with respect to Hamilton's retirement. We've got the whole Angela Hamilton split thing going on. I don't know what was going on there, and I've got three versions of it. There's a normal one, which is he's planning his retirement. It's time for him to help those who are closest to him get a good footing before then, right? He wants to set them up for success. He's like, let's get you out now. I'll still use my weight in F1 where I'm still on. I can use the pull of the paddock and I can help you set up your business or whatever it is. So he's going to get her out the door and he can help from behind the scenes, right? That's the normal one. There's the kind of weird one, which is that she wanted to remain his trainer because they work so well. But Hamilton, the ever family-friendly race car driver, realized that she needed to spend time with her family because in the off season she was just going skiing with her daughter. And because he's such a softy at heart, he had to let her go free. You know, the things that you love, you have to set them free. And so she didn't want to go. He wasn't happy in 2022 because of the amount of travel that she was doing and decides he has to fire her to get her to be free, which I think is vaguely plausible because they seem very happy. They were posting on Instagram about each other today. And then my last spicy hot take of the entire thing, I think it was Crofty that said this, but Sergeant Spin, when Sergeant spun his car, I don't wish ill upon any driver, but I think that needs to happen. When we had Mazda Spin before, but this is just even better. Sergeant Spin, it's perfect for t-shirts. It's amazing that we have this alliteration that we can say. We need to make this happen. Again, no ill will towards Sergeant Spin, but it's just there. It's waiting to be taken. Okay, so here we go. We're going into the final lap of this podcast where we do our wrap-up and we talk about our crazy but plausible prediction. For me, my crazy plausible prediction is that Mercedes will end up in fourth and fifth in Australia just like they always do, because no matter what they do, Ferrari will never be able to make that car work again because they've forgotten everything. Even if it's faster, they'll still screw up the strategy. What about you, Andrew? Have you got any crazy plausible predictions for next race?
It's Albert Park, so it's usually somewhat of an uneventful, eventful race. There could be something great. There could be something that just makes it uninspiring to watch at all. Usually there is one good accident. Somebody throws it into a wall in some kind of way, so I imagine we'll see one of those. Because it can be a little bit unpredictable in Albert Park, we saw the almost no-stop strategy from Albon last year or the year before. Yeah. I'm going to say that one of the teams currently without points, which I believe is AlphaTauri and McLaren, one of them will score points.
I will subscribe to that, and I will say that it will be AlphaTauri.
Just for the sake of diversity, I will say McLaren.
Okay, great, because it's going to be one of the two. You did remind me, as you were saying, about how Albert Park is uneventful. Given its position in the schedule, that used to be the first race of the season, you used to get a bit of excitement from it because the cars were all brand new. It was the first time that they were going out on track and you didn't really know how they were going to perform, so it added something to it. Now I'm questioning about the purpose of having that track on the thing. If it's boring and it's not the first track, why do we keep it? We could have replaced it with Spa, which they're going to kill anyway.
Bring back Adelaide.
Now there's a note to end on.
Yeah.
So... As we wrap up, which
is sad because I was going to also say that if that's our note to end on, it's sad because I was going to mention that if Red Bull doesn't do something with Danny Ric in Australia, being like a show lap and a show car or something like that, I better see some Danny Ric in Australia.
That's really interesting. Did they say he had something special planned? Is he the official reserve driver for Australia?
I hope he is.
I hope so. I do agree they should do something. There's always a possibility that Max or Checo will eat some mayonnaise with French fries and we'll have another gastrointestinal issue.
On top of that, I did mention to you earlier today, and I still stand by it, is that as Martin Brundle starts to think about retirement, because we know he doesn't show up to all the races as much anymore, if we're looking for somebody to take over Martin's grid walk on Sky Sports, I think Danny Ric is the guy to do it.
I would support that. I think he would add the levity that is needed in that situation. Otherwise, it gets way too serious. Every time I try and watch the official F1 TV grid walk, it's very serious, and it doesn't need to be serious. It needs to be comedy and lightweight.
Just please don't give it to Nico Rosberg.
We can hope. Okay, on that note, to quote another presenter, on that bombshell, remember, we're always waiting for your feedback. Write into feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com and let us know your conspiracies, your feedback, and your wants. We'll be back next time.
See y'all later.